Hello and welcome to Tribal Research Specialists, the podcast, where we will be talking about important things. That's not going to work either. Hello and welcome to Tribal Research Specialists, the podcast, a podcast dedicated to chatting about... Hello and welcome to...
Was working with all them reel-to-reels I had. I had one of the reel-to-reels I'm pretty sure was a bunch of Crow songs. And I think I showed you at one time years and years and years ago, and you said, oh yeah, those are... I could never find it again.
Oh, I think it was... Was it said like war dance songs on it or something like
no,
that?
No, it didn't say nothing. It was just, it was one that didn't have a label at all. And I thought, this sounds like a bunch of Crows singing, had that kind of just a bunch of Crows.
You're like, I know that crispy sound anywhere.
Yeah. Well, that's debatable. But who was really crispy?
You.
I don't know if I'd qualify crisp. Crisp has a I don't know. It's like when you slice a head of lettuce in half. Got to be fresh, man. It's got to be fresh.
Yeah. So who's a fresh singer?
Yeah. That's what I think. Crisp. I heard this lead one time, and it's memorable. It was on a tape from the old Skometzen days.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who it was. I don't remember at all. But whoever it was, they busted out a lead, and it sounded like they were whistling. It wasn't necessarily high. It just the pitch, you know, the tone. It sounded like the lead was this really long, beautiful whistle.
that was poetic, dude.
That was, man. That was. It called out to all the birds of prey to swoon about the arbor.
The peregrine falcons.
The peregrine shat upon the drum. Blessing it with its organic...
infused with poetry in motion.
infusing the hide.
Yeah, when I think so, it's opposite. Vegetables and singers are opposite, meaning vegetables are only fresh one time.
Oh yeah.
So you use them once. That's
right.
It.
Right.
Where it's opposite for a singer. A singer is only sound and crispy if he's used all the time.
Right. Like the potato.
Much like the potato.
You can take a potato and with your hands bust it in half, and it has a nice crisp snap. But it's a versatile vegetable. It can be used in many varieties. I get what you mean. Yeah. You only can use it once. Now you talk about a nice dry piece of meat, dry meat, seasoned just right.
Seasoned.
It stores for a long time. For a long time. And you eat it, or you prepare it 10 years ago, it might still be good today.
It's pushing her.
I know. Yeah. This is getting very metaphorical again.
Are we started?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I don't know. We're just kind of winging it. We're just winging it.
So I got a couple things going here that are on my mind. One is I opened up the old Excel spreadsheet.
Excel? Did you do a formula or did you sort?
No.
Did a sum?
No, I didn't use it mathematically. I'm using it organizationally. I'm not using it to cross multiply and solve for X. No. This is purely ethnographic.
Okay, let's go.
So I started with my father, then my mother, and goes through me and my brothers and sisters, and then their kids, kids.
So you're talking about genealogy.
Genealogy, genealogical use of Excel spreadsheets today is the subject.
In today's episode,
we're going to talk about the
how to usage. Use a pivot table to build your family tree. First of all, open up Excel.
You know what's funny is somebody would actually be like, dude, that's actually would be useful. You should.
Yeah, I want to know that.
So I'm using it. So I my title sales are English name. They're Crow Clan.
Wait, now you said your title sells.
Well, I'm filling in the sales, you know?
Okay. Because so, the way you say sell with the Crow variant sounds odd. Like it's a sale.
Sell.
Yeah. We got to get you assimilated, indoctrinated.
You know, you say it like a flathead. You put a glottal stop at the end of it.
Sell.
Was that an upside down question mark you just put there?
Okay, anyway.
So I got their English name, their clan, their Crow name, the English literal translation, and then the individual who gave the name.
Okay.
So I'm up to, let's see, there's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 individuals. And I'm filling in each of those fields. What's nice. Dude, don't laugh at me, man. I'm like serious right now.
Keep going.
So for example, on my father right here, Eric Brin, his Crow Clan he's a big lodge and he's a child of the Whistling Water.
Okay.
His Crow name is Ba'achadish, which literally means fortunate.
Okay.
And the person who named him is Verna Bird in the Ground Peas.
Okay.
So
following you.
My goal here is to get all of my mother's siblings and their kids. And then all of my father's siblings and their kids.
Okay.
And the reason I'm saying the English literal translation is in case the person doesn't know how to say it in the Crow language.
Yeah.
You would teach them at least how you would say it literally in the Crow. So, So, if you teach someone like Luella's boy, Jacob, his Crow name is Ishkogia Chagamna.
Yeah.
Now, if you teach him, when they gave him that name, they said, gathers up his enemies. Well, literally what it means is hauls his enemies. His enemy.
Haul,
like
as in
to haul.
Yeah.
So if
a bundle of wood.
If you were to go to a Crow speaker and say, how do you say to get haul or something or pick, you know, collect and pick up.
So easier to translate.
Chagamna. Yeah. Chagamna. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Got it. I was thinking about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
So what I'm saying is that's what I'm doing now. That's like my little project right now.
That's riveting.
It's not related to my work necessarily, not directly, but I've been very into names. That's always been a pet project of mine for quite some time. But with the new orthography that the Crow people have, I like it. That's what I'm going by is the Language Conservancy orthography. So, yes, go for it.
Well, this is That's cool, man. I'm into that. I'm into that too. And
I don't know. You laughed at me the whole time.
I was gonna point out some more of your Crow enunciation of words like field.
What did I put? What
filled.
Did I say?
Filled.
What?
Say field.
Field.
But if you say it naturally, you said filled.
Filled. Like the field. Like to play the field.
Yeah, yeah. But the way you said it, it naturally, without thinking about it, you said filled.
That's what I'm saying. Filled.
Sale. Filled.
Sale.
Yeah. I hear it all the time because Celicia does the same thing. And like wolf. You say wolf.
Wolf?
Yeah, it sounds... When you say it naturally, when you hear it said
naturally. I guess it's like school.
Yeah, school, wolf, yeah.
Milk.
Milk, yeah, milk. There was one...
Blackberry.
There's... I was teaching my one of my classes and... What was I saying? There was a word and it sounds very American now that I've... been introduced to a new dialect of English speaking. I can't remember the word now. God darn. Well, I'll remember it later and I'll tell you. It sounds really funny though when I was saying it. But no, okay, this thing. Okay. Genealogy, Excel is probably a minor part of that, but funny because it just is. But so I've been tracking population of the CSKT for probably a good, 12 years or so. And went back into the historical record and tracked population from what was reported, wherever I could find it. And one of the reasons was just to see the trend, you know, the trend of population. But it was also this report that was compiled so that the tribe paid for this report, population report, to get an understanding of when membership might decline based on the current blood quantum standards.
Mm-hmm.
And the timing of his report, I can't remember the date. It was maybe in the 90s, but he projected by this time, or I guess the time has already passed by 2015 or whatever, that the population would have declined. It hasn't. It didn't, according to his prediction, but it is now.
What was
now.
His formula? What was he basing
his
formula
on? This is the one. This is the one. This is what made me interested in. Is I bet his standard for population modeling was not necessarily fitting with the standard of interpersonal relationships among tribes. Now, and I thought, well, yeah, maybe not, but through the stages of assimilation that everybody's gone through, people probably don't necessarily follow those rules much anymore. I don't think. I think they do. So, for example, among our people, anybody up to the sixth generation is considered a relative of some sort. Up to the fourth, you call them by brother-sister terms. Fifth and sixth, they're just distant relative, but you're not supposed to marry those folks. You're not supposed to. But if you go by, say, the church rules or the Anglo-Saxon, is that something off of King of Thrones, the Anglo-Saxons?
That's two different groups of people.
Oh, okay. The Anglos and the Saxons. Saxon.
I think they're from Saxony, yeah. Right? Or something. Maybe we got a European scholar that could chime in.
Yeah, we ought to get one on, talk about things. Anyway. That standard is you can marry beyond a second cousin. So I thought, I bet this guy modeled using that standard. I wouldn't think that he would know.
Well, actually,
okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong. If he's using that model,
yeah,
then his decline in the enrollment population would be, his theory would have been opposite.
Meaning
that the decline would have happened much sooner.
Yeah. Right? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And that's what he predicted. And that's not what happened. The decline is happening now, which is 10 years beyond his prediction. I think. So that's what happened. But there was
I wonder what the margin of error is on something like that, though. You know,
there was
10 years. It seems pretty.
Yeah. There was a couple factors though. There was recent blood quantum changes in certain families. So like correction of errors, those kind of things happened. And especially for like an individual who had a large family that was from, you know, the the early 1900s. So that changed.
Are you talking about Jocko Finley?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's one of them. Yeah,
yeah.
That's one of them that changed funny. A lot of blood quantum, put people on the rolls and increased the membership. Yeah, but right now it's on a decline. But that's interesting what that you're talking about that because part of that being, I guess, a tribal group and the importance of knowing those names, I think has been lost. And I think did we talk about this before?
I think we've talked about names and stuff, yeah, but not on I don't remember us talking about it on the podcast. Okay.
That's pretty important. And I was in some workshop and I had to describe what my name is, you know, bought my name, you know, one of those icebreaker things, you know. And I had to say, yeah, Pete is just given by a BIA agent. It doesn't have much of a meaning except a marker in time and history. Mm-hmm. And I was speaking to a student recently and they were talking about their name. They said, oh yeah, I really like how the name, some of the names in America, the natives in America have such cool names, you know, like, Thunderhawk or I don't know, Ride
shout
the Horse.
Shout out to Hawk. Hawk Thunderhawk.
Yeah, little shout out to Hawk Thunderhawk. Yeah, those kind of things. And I said, well, why don't you just go change your name? You can do that. Just revert back to your old name. And
yeah, I mean, you're right. You're right in theory, but still it's the idea. So you got all these native people who say, well, I'm going to change my name to my Indian last name.
Yeah.
Right on. But that's still following the surname system.
Right.
I mean, you could have your last name could be Volkswagen Beetle. It's still like, I mean, I get it. I think it does give people a sense of empowerment.
Yeah.
Maybe or a sense of identity. Like recently I had a relative change their last name and they picked the name of someone. And when I thought they should have picked the name of somebody else.
Yeah.
But then after I was kind of like, they should have picked that. Then I thought, who the hell cares? I mean, like, if that's the name they want to pick, then go for it, you know?
Yeah. And well, I'm curious, did they make that name change stick or was it just symbolic?
No, they like went and got their name legally changed. And
that and just the last name, though?
Just the last name, yeah.
Okay. They still have a Christian first name.
Yeah.
English first name.
English. I was going to say, I don't know if Kenneth is.
That's more Presbyterian.
It's, you know, it's very biblical. It's everyone Hebrew. Knows about the 13th apostle.
Kenneth.
Kenneth. Yeah. He was actually a Turkish immigrant that went to the tribe of King David and through his bilineal descendancy. And
worked at the woolen mill.
He worked at the old woolen mill at Galilee. You know, Galilee. He was there at the Galilee. At the Galilee Merc.
Hey, okay, what do you think about what do you think about the name? So which Rez? Now think of the Rezes that you know here in Montana. Who?
Well, I know other Rezes.
Well, okay, we have no boundaries. Think of the Rezes that you're familiar with, and where do you hear the name Kirby for a native person?
For a last name?
No, first name, man. Kirby. Where do you picture a Kirby?
Man, where do I picture him?
Yeah.
I'm going to say Minnesota, but I'm only saying that because of Kirby Puckett, who played for the Minnesota Twins.
No, I'm talking about native people. Come on. Which Rez has a Kirby?
I mean, I keep thinking of Kirby Saloon in Northern Cheyenne. I don't know who.
I don't know. That's just a dumb question.
Oh, here's another question. If we're talking about names, have you ever met an old man named Kyle?
No.
There's not no one. Old Kyles.
That's yeah. Or have you ever seen an old redhead?
Ooh. Because even Ron Howard went bald, huh?
I think so, yeah.
Happy days.
Man. So if you got a redheaded Kyle, chances are they're not going to make it.
If you got a redheaded Kyle, what you got there is a unicorn. Huh, that's interesting. I'm trying to think about it. I don't know if I've ever met a older person with a red hair,
yeah.
Nor have I met an old Kyle.
I think of a Kirby as someone who lives in Fort Belknap for some reason. Like I could see a person named Kirby in Fort Belknap.
Yeah, maybe. I guess, yeah, Kirby Chandler. Kirby Bell. Everyone knows Kirby Bell.
Lives down there, the agency. Yeah,
lives between right at in the canyon.
Right in the canyon, yeah.
You gotta talk like you're from like the canyon.
Yeah, the canyon. Like you know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Which we don't, but
okay.
So anyway, that's been kind of my pet project here is I decided I'm gonna do that. What I'm noticing this trend among Indian people in Montana is, and I think this is just a product of culture loss, is each family relies too much on one individual.
Yeah.
So like you have your family patriarch or matriarch, and you're always, anytime you have question, you're like, we got to go to them. Never putting cultural responsibility on the individual themselves. So you rely for all your cultural knowledge, for all your needs. For example, I got a phone call yesterday. There was a dead owl at the BIA building.
Yeah.
We don't know what to do with it now. Everyone's freaking out about this owl. So I go over there and I just say, well, we'll just take it. We'll go put it in the river. So
yeah.
But I wasn't shaken up about it. Like I didn't come home and go, oh God, bless America, we found this dead owl. And I tried to tell them. I said, well, Dex, if this happens to you again, this is what you do. And it was the attitude I was getting back was that they just get the owl and get it out of here.
Do your job.
So I'm like, wait, this is weird. Like. Don't you want to be self-sufficient, like culturally self-sufficient?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, what if you have kids what if you have a home or in something like this happens, are you going to stop everything and have to go get some old guy or some old lady and come over and make them berry pudding? And, you know, like, are you going to have enough know-how and enough skill and cultural knowledge to take care of the issue immediately?
Yeah.
That way it's, if there is an issue,
yeah.
Bada bing, bada boom. And then, like, I was texting Mike LaFromboise about it because I was like, what do you think? And then he said, you know, sometimes owls just die.
Yeah, they do.
I was like, yeah, I know, dude. Like, I agree with you. Like, we can't just assume every time something weird happens that it's negative or that it's like,
it's a sign.
Have you noticed like
omen
trend among Indian people right now, especially in our region here, they're like a high level of paranoia?
Yeah. In a way. Yeah.
Yeah.
For certain things. The owl is one of them. It's persisted.
Dude, the owl will shut a place down.
It will.
But some of these same people will go to the bar. Throw back the old fireball shots, you know, the old hot damn. And then they're like, that owl freaking me out. And I'm like, I don't know
if that's should be your biggest worry.
I mean, not judging anybody. If they want to drink, that's their thing, but I don't drink. But I just don't think like you can say, why are you whistling at night?
Yeah.
I'm like, shit, we just got home from the bar. You know, like, why you were like, that's not even like, it's not the same. It's like, I mean, if we're that worried about the spiritual world, we wouldn't invite things that can hinder our protections, you know?
Right. Drugs, alcohol, jealousy.
What, even fighting in your home, right? Arguing with your wife.
Arguing around.
you know, like there's a lot of things.
Too much screen time.
Too much screen. That screen time.
Yeah. Spending too much time on TikTok.
That god awful screen time. Hey, you know, I went through the Instagram stage. I went through the Snapchat stage.
Yeah.
But man, I'm gonna tell you something. TikTok's got me, man.
There's some funny stuff on there, though.
That's a hard thing to put down.
It is. It is.
I mean, like, you can just keep going. You can just keep going.
Yeah, this is just this barrage of funny. It's like getting peppered with funny.
It's nonstop comedy.
It is. Yeah, somebody told me today, and this was pretty intriguing. This is along the lines of what you're saying. They said, throughout history, this was a guy I just met from Uruguay. And we were talking, you know, colonization or whatever, you know, all that stuff. Yeah. He was talking about what, we don't want to say it too loud. The C word in front of Aaron. Anyway,
I get worked up.
Anyway, and he said, you know, all these religions that come through and all these dictatorships, they all try to influence and make people bend to the will of some certain thing. He said, but the one that's been the most successful, and he held up his phone, this thing.
Well, I'd have to agree with that.
Yeah, it's
been the most successful in the shortest amount of time.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it dethroned the Christian church.
Yeah.
In the influence of the Christian church.
Right.
I mean, whether that's good or bad, we're just talking about influence.
Yeah.
But in the shortest amount of time, man.
Yeah, it has.
In Indian country, it dethroned, man. It dethroned the horse.
The phone?
Yeah.
What?
The most influential thing on our culture.
It wasn't the car? The horse
was pretty... by then, I mean, the conveniences of the car... The horse changed everything.
Yeah. Horse changes everything. But you think the phone dethroned the horse?
I think so, as far as how influential it is on our culture.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. I'd say, yeah. What one of recent?
That's a tough one.
Disclaimer that. I'm going to go back.
Okay, go back, because it's getting boring now.
I'm going to go back to this idea of you're talking about this one person who's been given the responsibility to carry the weight of cultural ideas. Where does that come from? Because you hear the same thing, like the song keeper, the one who keeps the songs. And I don't know. I mean, I don't think that was ever really a thing.
Or like when nowadays it's real popular to say knowledge keeper.
The knowledge keeper, the song keeper, the drum keeper. The keeper of the sacred fire. I'm thinking of one
individual when you said song keeper. I'm thinking of one individual from where you're from that told me that one time.
Yeah. Okay.
I just remember the conversation.
It was a long time. Yeah.
15 years ago. And it was like,
I'm wondering, where does that come from? What is that? Because I don't think it's nothing that's rooted in not necessarily in tradition. I don't know, though.
I'm sure
there was just some things like a person who kept a certain, maybe like a pipe or some spiritual item.
So like you have rights, right? Someone who holds the office of something.
Yeah.
Now, maybe some of that is influenced by, we always go back to this grassland society where there are offices and people hold titles like the muscle owner, the whip carrier.
Yeah.
Or not that was rooted deeply in anybody's in reservation, but our tribe, but those offices are there. So in the case of like, oh, we're the song keeper. I mean, maybe I can kind of see that in that.
Yeah.
This idea of.
Yeah.
Well, he's this and he's that. But.
Yeah.
Man, I think it's definitely influenced by like. I don't want to say English, but that's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah. Well, I know it was like in the early the mid 1800s when the Catholic Church first came to Montana here. One of their ways to assimilate was to do just that, like create offices, like these religious offices. So they designate some older lady to hold the office of whatever for this religious purpose. And that was one of the ways that they, I think they used our some of like our idea of vanity in a way to capture some of our attention. And people would vie for those positions. Like, I want to be that. I want to be what that is right there. So I think in a way that idea persisted. I don't know for sure, but you see the same thing. Like, I want a story. So I'm going to go find the person who's the keeper of the stories, or, you know, the storyteller, the sage who will show up and tell stories to the kids. But that, I don't know if that's exactly accurate.
Okay, so at this time, I want to give a special shout out to our Patreon sponsors, Louise Erdrich, Travis Davis, Rachel Holster, Marzana, Ryan Swanson, and Emma LaFlave. Thank you for your continued contribution to the show and for helping us to stay on the air.
No, and maybe it's not completely inaccurate.
Yeah.
But it's not.
It's romanticized.
It's romantic. Yeah, it's romantic. Yeah. I freaking had a brain fart right there. Yeah. I was like, I don't know the next word I'm supposed to say.
You lost the script.
I know. Man down. Line.
So I guess in that way, you know, there probably was people who were better at telling stories. You know, they could tell them in a more entertaining way, I guess. And I guess in that same regard, maybe there was folks who were better at remembering certain songs. Maybe.
I think that's just more like talents.
But yeah.
My grandmother talks fondly of a time where, some people still do this, so I'm not going to say it's gone, but
yeah,
like you could have company over and eat, share a meal, and then you might start telling stories.
Yeah.
And you'll learn a lot from those stories. But that's very different than having a storytelling, which
right. You
actually, they say to make berry pudding and bread. And then you might have coffee nowadays, but I'm sure it was tea or water back in the day. But you would invite somebody, you would feed them, and then they would tell stories.
Hmm.
The sole purpose was to bring an outside individual to tell stories.
Yeah.
Maybe some of that comes from that. So like if I'm a little kid and I witness this, I might attach a meaning to that individual.
Yeah.
And with a culture that's dying off, maybe you can have people say, well, when I was a kid, they would invite this person. Default, that person was the one that knew things, but now that becomes a thing now. Well, when I was a kid, the old timers would invite so-and-so. Louis Ninepipe would come over.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that he had any more or any less knowledge than other people before him. It was by default, he was the numbers were dwindling.
Now
people our age say, oh, well, we had Louis was the R. Lee guy.
Yeah.
Now it's Johnny or whatever. You know what I mean? Like you're attaching a thing to it.
Yeah.
You tell me.
No, I think you're right. And I think it has
purely speculation.
It has some merit to it. But I think the bigger the thing that's probably more important is that we get lazy, I guess, and start relying on someone to do something that really is a maybe more of a communal or a community responsibility. Like you said, you got to call somebody to go come down from whatever they're doing to take care of a dead animal because of some taboo that maybe is been misappropriated in some way,
not fully understood.
Whereas it should have been a number of people who should understand, who could take care of that, so that the designation of those kind of things is spread out, and then the burden is spread out amongst everybody.
Yeah, and I'm not saying what was asked of me is wrong. I think it was the appropriate thing to do.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was funny how I was like, well, here, I'll show you what you could do. Then yeah. once that was said, then it was like, well, I don't know, you know?
Yeah.
It was like, okay. Well, then at that point, it's like on you, right?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, that's interesting because this is something I've been thinking about and it's along the lines of just that is, and I don't know, it kind of goes against what I was thinking in relation to what you're saying.
That, oh, okay.
That perked you right up.
I like that. I like a little dissension in the ranks.
Yeah, yeah. Let's get some art. Well, this was my thought about a couple weeks ago or a week ago. I was thinking about this term about sovereignty and native, in relation to indigenous folks and their sovereignty. That sovereignty is. I guess you could say comes from treaties in a way, in the way that we're speaking of it. So we have sovereignty in the United States in a way because of this treaties we signed that provide, I don't know, certain rights. I don't know if that's totally true, but that's kind of the way I think about sovereignty. Sovereignty guaranteed because of this treaty. So we can act in an affair that's,
it reserved an existing right.
Okay, I like that better. Okay, and it reserved an existing right, but then it entangles that existing right into some odd legal authority, whether it's the United States, Canada, into that the norm of that legal system, the norms mm-hmm. of that legal system. That's it's complicated, and then it starts to get very complicated.
Yeah, because now then you get into the interpretation of that legal right, of that yeah. inherent right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because interpretation and precedent, too, are two different things. The precedent of that right. So the way the American legal system really works is law says one thing, but law in action says another thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
How is it presided over? That's a whole yeah. different thing. So you can say, we have these. Right. For example, the Herrera case, it yeah. reserved a hunting right based on this language in the treaty.
Yeah.
In theory, if that document was all telling in the Supreme Contract of the world, it would have never had to have gone to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
the idea that it was questioned.
Yeah.
We had to wait for precedent to be set. And yeah. It was challenged. So law is only, it seems to me that law is only as strong as the challenge that it is faced.
Yes. Agreed. Agreed.
Okay. So going back to what you're saying.
Yeah.
Go.
Oh, go. Okay. So there's that. And this goes back to something. So the history of it is I did this panel on indigenous astronomy and one of the controversies that was talked about was the telescopes on indigenous lands and how indigenous folks, whether they want them or not, was not considered in the equation because some folks say, well, that land is indigenous land. Well, we're familiar with the hashtag land back and the memes and the beadwork, everything land back, you know. But I try to bring up this interesting angle that from what I understand, we never really did claim ownership of land that I guess is in the norm of American or Canadian traditions, right? What I was saying is. We didn't go fight a battle with our enemies and then put up a fence and saying, we won, now this is our land. We own this land and you shall never reside on it. You shall never put up anything, any structure on it because now we own this land. That's an odd concept. It seems to me, if we're examining traditions from, you know, our values and those kind of things. So then I thought, well, yeah, that's all good and dandy, I suppose, in theory. But I think that really rests on this idea that that people were far more important. Well, I guess shouldn't say far more important, but were one of the most important things in a tribal group, like that idea of banding together. I mean, land was there; it's provided for us. But you know, we're fairly I don't know, moved around where we needed to be based on our personal needs, but the need to be amongst a group of people, I think, was far more important than the landscape itself. I don't know if that's true, but that was my thought. That was my thought. That people are one notch ahead of the landscape. In those times, we needed each other to survive. But that's when the land was fairly plentiful, you know, and in a way.
So based on what you're saying, though, you're still separating humanity from landscape, though.
Well, okay. Yeah. You're right. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, assuming that they're not separated, I'm putting things on a hierarchy of need, I guess you could say. So someone would choose to go with their tribal group if they were migrating to somewhere else, rather than stay on a landscape because they felt they were connected there. Like, no, I will not leave. I will stay here alone. You guys go off wherever you're going. I'm going to stay here in my land, this land that I'm attached to.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think in that case, yeah, you're right. The need to be with people outweighs the need to be with that landscape.
Yeah.
Right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. In a very simplified manner. I mean, okay. It's far more complex than that. But saying that the need to be...
Like, I don't know. Is it?
I don't know. That's what I don't know. Because I don't know.
How about this? Sidebar.
Sidebar it. Okay.
Sidebar.
Reserve that. Sidebar.
Sidebar. We don't have to... subscribe to things we're told we have to believe. Like,
yeah,
we're told we have to be one with the earth. So sometimes there's people afraid to say, like, is it possible that there was some separation? But we're told that all the time we were in tune with the earth. Maybe we weren't.
Yeah.
Okay. Back. Boom.
Okay. Boom. Yeah. I think that's true. So back. So yeah. So I think about that today. If that's true, I don't know if it is or not. It seems to be true. If you think about people, our need, I'm sure we would choose our family over a river. We'd choose. That's really weighing some really weird things. Like saying, yeah, of course I'd choose my child over a mountain. That's dumb. That's a stupid comparison. But it highly
individualizes the thought, though. So it does. Again. It does. That person, would that even arise?
Yeah. Would it? I don't know.
It's hard to say. So, for example, if we're going to move camp,
yeah,
those decisions aren't made arbitrarily. These were not trivial pursuits.
That's so awesome. There wasn't a monopoly on decision making.
Yeah, no.
In fact, it was quite the chess match among leaders.
Leaders would levy propositions and advisement to each other.
I was trying to reference games. I didn't know if you've seen that in there. Oh, he just blew it.
Chutes and ladders. If we were to connect four to make these decisions.
The calculated risk.
I mean, you're playing poker with lives. Anyway, this is dumb.
Yeah, it is. So my point, after all that,
what
I don't know.
The hell is your point?
I don't know if it's true. I think it is.
What was the question?
This is the question.
Let's refresh the question.
So, well, there was really no question. It was just a train of thought that's leading to this idea that today we don't need each other, indigenous people, especially tribal group. We don't need each other like we did in the past. That's true. That has to be true. Right?
No.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. And the only reason I'm going to say this is because all you do is reassign your tribal group to something else.
Okay.
So I can believe that. Might say, well, perfect example, you left Darlie.
Yeah.
You don't go to this new location and say, now we're just us in this room.
Yeah.
You immediately start to distribute need. To a group,
right?
Whether that's people you work with, whether that's students, but there's need still, whether it's the grocer down the road, whether it is, you still need the group. You just change the title of that group.
Okay. I see.
Is that dumb?
No. It's not. Because that's confirming the need, the human need to be around other humans. For what purpose, though? So if you think about the old days, always say the old days.
Oh,
you needed each other for protection. I don't know, hunting, you know, just banding together for
hunting
and gathering.
Hunting in the old way.
But today, I think it's easy to cast away members of our own people just because we don't like them, just because the need to keep some sort of social order is not as strong as it was.
Or is it just redefined?
I don't know. I want to know. I want to know if it is. So we can go out. We can go off because this is how gossip and lying, backstabbing was really curbed because there was this. I think there was this need to keep some sort of peace among people that you relied on for some reason. Of course,
I'm actually pretty lost right now in this conversation. I was trying to connect the dots.
I went off. So the main point was, I think, and you're proving me wrong, which is good because I was holding this belief for a few weeks. Like, okay, we don't really need each other as tribal people. So Salish people, Crow people, we can say this guy, I don't like him no more. So I don't even care about him.
So
I don't care what he can contribute to anything anymore. Let's cast him away.
Let's question this then.
Okay.
What was tribal identity 300 years ago?
Yeah, we don't know.
I know for a fact Crow people had wives from other tribes.
Yeah.
Did they say, we are all Crow Indians? Or was it just a functioning society that had insiders, outsiders, visitors? Yeah. And like, remember we talked about this once, you and I, about like how we do these kind of, people learn these phrases now, like they're in their language. My name is such and such. I'm a this kind of Indian, but I'm from this place.
Yeah.
It's like, did they really do that? Or was it? Like,
oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't really know what I'm getting at here, but I think it was never stagnant. It was always changing. It was always being challenged. All it is now is that it's the same thing, but the tools are different, the mechanisms are different, and the outcomes are different. But it's the same old question as, I mean, who we are and how the hell did we get here, you know? And because, okay, think of it this way. I'm a Crow Indian. You're a Salish Indian.
Yeah.
But when it comes to my tribe, my inner circle, the people I rely on for things, you're definitely one of them. You're not of my tribe, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I do know what you mean. It's overlapping. There's overlapping groups of people that you rely on for whatever human need you have. It's not specific tribally today. I don't know if it was in the past. I'm sure there was a lot of things going on, but we hold this idea that it was just like this one little amoeba of people kind of poking around the landscape and in their little bubble, you know? And I think that's where that idea comes from, is that, okay, we don't need people as much anymore as we do. So then that little amoeba of people is more easily broken. But what you're saying is that, no, I don't think that was necessarily true.
But I don't know also.
No, you said it. So
yeah,
it said,
I mean,
I don't know.
And here's where we put our reminder. I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Or what I'm talking about, apparently.
Man, I don't know. That's a tough question, because now I'm starting to guess, second guess even everything I just told you.
No, I think it makes sense because I was thinking about it far, far too simplistically. I was thinking of like a really isolated group of people who once were in the past. They relied on each other very heavily for their, you know, human social needs, for protection, food, whatever, you know, whatever it was in those old times. But it's not the same today. because we don't need to go ask Joe for help or Joe and Jim and John.
Joe owns the grocery store.
Yeah. That was my point. Unless they own a grocery store. Now we can go get food. We don't even know where it comes from. We don't know who packaged it, cut it up, put it in a box. We have no idea. So we don't need to know that person no more.
But you still need to have that person.
But there's some need that still needs to be fulfilled. I don't know what it is. I don't know where
it's at. The individual might change, but the role has to stay the same. Regardless of what era you came in, those people who provide services need to be there regardless.
Yeah.
Even if you were living by yourself and you're like, I'm never going to go anywhere and I'm just going to write my manifesto. I mean, you still need someone to bring you groceries. You still need. So there's still the need. The basic needs are still there.
Yeah.
They're just redefined. And in anthropology, there used to be a big theory called the competition of resources.
Okay.
Regardless of era and time.
Yeah.
The need, the resource can be redefined, but the motive is always competition of resources. So whether that's, more people to gather more food, or that's collecting likes to get revenue on social media and views. It's a resource.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether that's the Christian church and the collection of souls, and whether that's a tribal people and it's the purchasing of land or whatever.
Yeah,
the competition of resources always been a driving force. It's just up to you in your situation to know what those resources are, and then how do you make your network to compete for those resources?
Hmm. Interesting.
Was that nonsense? It kind of seemed a little bit
like nonsense. No, it wasn't. No, I think it's right on line. I'm just thinking of it as, yes, true. I do need the grocery store and those who work in it and whoever imports all that food and the farmer who packages it.
But are you confusing intimacy too? Like, how well do you know these people?
Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. I don't necessarily need to have a relationship with those people to survive anymore. Whereas in a smaller group, tribal group, just by way of the nature of the living that you did, you knew people and you knew them and you did those activities with them to do that.
Agreed.
Yeah, agreed.
But the market systems change everything. Goods and services now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So today, native people today, and we never knew that other system. Anybody alive today didn't really know that system. Well, I guess there's some older folks who lived in a time where they did kind of get a hint of that. But today, no. No, we don't need to go get a hunting party to go get some chicken strips. We just go get chicken strips.
Now you just pick up your bro.
You just pick up your bro, go get chicken strips. Yeah, and that's it.
I don't know. I feel like we're out of our wheelhouse too in this conversation.
I was just thinking about that. And sovereignty and all that business. And that really, what is it? What is this sovereignty business? I don't know. I don't know. It's not my thing. I think about it, but it's not.
Hey, this is where we could have Dana come on.
We ought to.
He worked in tribal government, works for the BIA now. I think he would have some interesting views on what sovereignty is on a real practical level.
Yeah. All right.
See, that's the problem with academics is like academics tend to stay in a theoretical framework.
Yeah,
so everything's like, what is sovereignty? Well, shut up.
Yeah. Give me that book. Throw it in the garbage.
Settle down, Vine.
Yeah. Let's keep it real here. We ought to do that. So yeah, that was my thought. It was long and drawn out. We need.
I interrupted a lot, and I'm doing it again.
So. No, that's all right, man. We need someone on to maybe make some clarifications. That'd be good, man. I'm into it.
Yeah.
So I want to explore it more. Let's do that. You're getting tired, man.
So how about this?
Okay.
How about if you had to do a commercial for our podcast, what would you say right now? Do it in your best Okay, here it is. Do it in a southern accent, but use Resi phrases. And talk about okay, let's try.
We need to get some Oki on here.
Let's try it. Okay.
Oh man. Three, two, one, go. Howdy, y'all. This is Kirby from Lawton. We're just here down at the 49. And we just want to tell you about a great program. called Travel Research Specialist. Yeah. Now it ain't like your standard southern singing group, but they do talk about cool stuff. I don't know, man. I don't know. I want to hear yours, man.
I didn't think you'd do it. No way, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, you have to now, man. I did it.
You know, this is the scholar meets athlete in you, because you were like, I don't want to do it. As soon as I did it, you were like, I'm going to try to do it well.
I heard the whistle go. I shook hands and I went for it, man.
You shot for that double.
All right, you.
Oh my god.
You?
No, I'm not doing ready. It, dude.
I'm gonna give you a two count. Two.
That won't work on me, dude.
And a one. Oh man.
You're, I just wanted to see if you
you're in the what do they call it? The Valley of Chiefs.
I'm not in the Valley of the Chiefs.
You are of a noble people.
That's 25.
And you failed. You failed.
That's 20 miles
you
away.
You failed your people.
No,
this is going to be memorialized in time. Okay, let's do it. Let's do it in your favorite tribal accent, not of your own. I know where you're going.
Oh, it got to go blood.
You got to go. The tribal research specialist add 10. 3, 2, 1.
Hit it. You're gonna do that 10.
I was gonna go 10, that was too long. I skipped to 3.
Going 10.
10. 3, 2, 1, go. Come on.
Good Channel. Evening, eh? Welcome to Tribal Research Specialist, eh? We're gonna today, when you get bored and you want to learn these ways. You just click on your phone, eh? Listen. Open your ears. We're gonna listen. These guys know what they're talking about, eh? That's good. Iksugabi. Anya.
Yay! Yes! That was it, man. I think that's going to be our last episode. We're going to discontinue.
And we're going to get canceled.
We're canceled, man. That was awesome.
We're canceled.
Well, I think that's enough for tonight.
Yeah, man.
You're about ready to tap out, man.
Okay, so I got a new segment for us, though. So we got to do this to end it.
Okay.
You have to think of a topic. Okay. We'll call it TRS Quick Topics. Yeah, what do you want to do? What's our response time?
No, you. You're the one doing this, so. You be in charge. Okay. It can't be a long time.
No. Should we do like 30 seconds?
Okay, let's do it. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, 30 seconds. Now the next question is I'm going to ask you a topic that you know nothing about.
Oh.
Doesn't have to even be related to tribal people.
Okay.
You just have to articulate it in 30 seconds.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you.
All right.
Okay. What? Okay, yeah, I'm ready.
Are you ready?
I already embarrassed myself once. Let's do it again.
This topic doesn't have to make sense for me. I can come up with something and say define it. All right, I can say. So, Sean Dean.
Yeah.
What is cultural osmosis?
Cultural osmosis is the process of two cultural groups meeting and thereby employing Frick's law to create a balance between the cultures. If there is a gradient or a discrepancy in the amount of cultural expression between the two groups, which could be anything related to religion, spirituality, social order, etc. Time. Okay. That was dumb. Cultural osmosis.
I didn't know. I looked at this pop and I thought osmosis. And then I seen a hand drum. And I mean, okay.
Okay.
Peace out, everybody.
We're going to talk about this more, the sovereignty deal, but with another individual who hopefully will know more than we do, because apparently we're a bit dumb when it comes to it.
We're going to ask for help.
All right. Thank you for joining us on this episode. And if you want to learn more about what we're up to, go ahead and search Tribal Research Specialists in Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube, and check out our other sites. And if you want to contribute to the show, go ahead and look us up on Patreon. We would appreciate your donation.